It's Tuesday, May the 3rd, 2022. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Orlando, Florida. Well, good afternoon and welcome to a podcast from the road. I haven't done these or done one of these for quite a while. I've had the opportunity the last 2 days to attend the wonderful Atlas Conference. Atlas is the Association of Technology Leaders in Independent Schools, and this is the first face-to-face conference at which I have presented in over 2 years. I should probably figure out exactly when the last one was, presented multiple times over Zoom and different webinar platforms and things like that in the last 2 years. But it is great to be back, not only to face-to-face conferences, but also to presenting. And Shelley and I, my wife, got to attend a wonderful conference in Houston at the Johnson Space Center called the SEEK Conference, which is S-E-E-C, the Space Exploration Educators Conference. And that was at the beginning of February, which was wonderful. But pandemic is still more on, and this is Florida, but it's just, there were a few folks wearing masks, and that's great. But overall, it really felt like a return to normalcy. So I have recorded my session today. My breakout session was originally titled Teaching About Conspiracy Theories Without Being Fired, but we actually changed the title, and what we went with was Teaching Conspiracy Theories and Media Literacy. And so this is a story and overview of the really four-part and probably about 10-meeting unit that I do with my sixth graders, focusing on web literacy, learning about the SIFT web literacy framework, and studying about the Apollo moon landings. And so, anyway, we've got lights coming on here. Hey, that is not my flight. Oh, it is my flight. Okay. All right. Well, hey, I'm going to try to get this thing edited. So without further ado, here is my presentation from the Atlas Conference in Orlando at the Renaissance Hotel at SeaWorld. Here we go. Please check out the show notes for links. You can find a link to this presentation several places, but on my handouts website, which is wiki.westfryer.com. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back from lunch. If you have not had an opportunity to grab a Dixie cup of Fruit Loops with my sixth graders, when we do this unit, we have a popcorn movie day, and we've added Fruit Loops because, why not celebrate with something that helps make the learning a little more durable? Today, we are going to talk about teaching about conspiracy theories and media literacy. And I like to call this my Fruit Loop Conspiracy Theory Unit. And I do not have an academic citation for that, but when I was growing up, sometimes we'd say, man, that is a Fruit Loop idea. It is so far out there. And as I'll explain, I try to help my students understand, some conspiracies turn out to be real. But there are some that are Fruit Loop, and they are way out there, and part of the objective here is to try and identify those. So my name is Wes Fryer. You can find the slides today. I've pinned it to my Twitter, at W Fryer. You can also visit medialiteracy.westfryer.com. I will be moving from Oklahoma City, where I've been at the Cassidy School the last 7 years, to teach at Providence Day School in Charlotte, North Carolina. And so in that process of getting ready, I have started to move some of my lessons off of the school Google site onto my own. So lessons.westfryer.com has that linked. But I have had the opportunity the last 3 years to teach media literacy for all of our fifth and sixth grade students. It is a trimester course, and I'm also an advisor this year.
been able to teach through the pandemic, and I was our tech director for 4 years, but I've really enjoyed the opportunity to pivot back to the classroom. My doctorate is in curriculum and instruction from Texas Tech University, and media literacy is my jam. I really have found my tribe, and I'm going to give you all an opportunity here in just a minute to turn to those at your table just really quick, just to introduce and say why you came to this session. But my outline is, number one, and I might not even need to do this because you self-selected coming here, but why should we teach about conspiracy theories? Second of all, I want to give you a brief overview of the unit, which is 4 main lessons, but it now takes me about 8 to 10, 45, 50-minute sessions to address this, about a third of our trimester. And then I'm going to share 10 things I've learned teaching this 6 times, because the last 2 years I've been teaching this, and one of the things that I have really enjoyed is iterating with this unit and tweaking it and hopefully making it better. But let me give you and by the way, these slides are linked there. It's a Google slide deck. Please feel free with all of this. It's Creative Commons, attribution only licensed. That means do with it what you would like. I would love it if some of you would want to take this back to your school and integrate this, make it your own. I really think there's a lot of good conversations that we need to have. I don't know if you saw the printed version of this session, but it was earlier called Teaching About Conspiracy Theories Without Being Fired. We could think of it this way too. Like, we want to safely talk about these topics. And so let me give you about 60 seconds. Turn to someone at your table, introduce yourself, and tell them why you came to this session with all the other choices that were present. And move if you're by yourself, just for real quick. Just to talk to somebody. All right. Well, the networking at Atlas and probably every educational event is super, super important. And the fact that you're here indicates interest in these topics, and possibly that you might be someone who wants to keep learning about this topic. And that's certainly the case for me. I have found over the course of my educational career and presenting that conferences and events like this are a catalyst for me to organize some of my ideas a little bit more and go to the next level. And this is part of a bigger project I've been working on for 3 years. And I really think this is going to continue to be part of my work as an educator, is working at an intersection of media literacy, social media, digital citizenship, and just critical thinking and helping our kids become and ourselves more web literate, more savvy when it comes to the ways that advertising and media messages are crafted and targeted and a whole host of different things. So let me start by telling you a story about this Fruit Loop conspiracy theory. That's a picture of our daughter Rachel, who's now a high school senior about to graduate. Up in Wyoming, near Cody, Wyoming, actually outside the Northwest entrance to Yellowstone Park, a couple summers ago by our cousin's cabin, and some stories by the campfire. It's oftentimes good to start with a story. So before the pandemic, remember that, in the summer of 2019, I had an opportunity to go to Providence, Rhode Island to hang out with Renee Hobbs and this wonderful group of media literacy and digital literacy educators at the Summer Institute for Digital Literacy. And I have a slide at the end about that, because this year the conference will not just be online as we've been the last 2 years, but it'll be face-to-face in Chicago. But we were face-to-face in Providence, and the gentleman with the yellow box around his head is Brian Turnbaugh, who's a high school teacher in Chicagoland, and Brian and I had the good fortune for the week to be nearby neighbors in the dorm that we were staying in for the institute, and Brian and I soon found that we loved podcasts, and as we shared the podcast that we're interested in, he shared this Reply All episode from December 15, 2017 called The Prophet. Has anybody listened to this before? So Gimlet Media, Reply All, like really excellent podcast. There's a ton of podcasts. I'd love to do a pop-up session sometime, like share the best, you know, podcast that you love listening to, because it really, podcasting is a fantastic way to learn and especially to dive deep. And this particular podcast about Mexico City and a conspiracy theory and internet trolls and just, oh my gosh, how we've We're in this wild world where you really have to be careful what you say and who, you know, receives those messages, but the ways that things get to trend on social media and the ways there can be physical threats and implications to journalists and to all kinds of things. Just, this is kind of a mind-blowing podcast. And so that led to really a big collaboration. And in the summer of 2020, we got on a StreamYard webcast together that I recorded and shared and just did a lot of brainstorming and came up with this project, which is still ongoing, called Conspiracies and Culture Wars. The hashtag is ConCW. If you want to look on Twitter, there's a whole bunch of stuff that has been tweeted in the past couple years. But it led to today and the last 2 years of this Fruit Loop conspiracy theory. And one of the one of the big ahas that Brian helped me realize is, okay, we're not going to talk about QAnon with sixth graders, okay? In fact, we may not even talk about virus conspiracies and Bill Gates and microchips. Like, the politicization of all this is very hazardous. It's important to talk about, but what's developmentally appropriate? I teach middle schoolers. But how about the moon landings? How about the idea that the moon landings were faked? How about these studies that show that large swaths of not just folks in the United States, but in England and other places are thinking that the moon landings were faked? So, why teach about conspiracy theories? I debated in college, so contention one. We live in a highly polluted, fractured attention economy and information landscape in which media literacy skills are essential for everyone. I don't really use the term fake news with my kids, and sometimes it'll come up and they'll talk about it, but I said, you know, that term has been utilized by some groups and individuals to really discredit journalism overall. I lived in Mexico City for a year after college. I've traveled internationally a bit. I really, really am thankful for journalists and the roles that they play, the Fourth Estate. Yes, we have misinformation and disinformation and malinformation, but I like these phrases and these terms about pollution and fractured and attention economy. Here's my second contention that takes us to today's lesson. Talking about conspiracy theories can be a very engaging and exciting thing. And the word is out at our school. Are we going to talk about conspiracy theories? Are we doing that yet? Because there's a lot of interest and there's all sorts of intersections with conspiracy theories. But when we decide to talk about something like the Apollo moon landings, which there are genuinely a large number of people that still will say, yeah, Stanley Kubrick, you know, director of 2001, A Space Odyssey, yeah, he faked it, you know, and you can just go on YouTube and it's a little bit harder now because the algorithms are always changing. It used to be even easier to, I think, go down a rabbit hole, but those rabbit holes still exist. But pairing a conversation about the moon landings, conspiracy theories generally, but being careful of which ones we're going to talk about, and then the SIFT web literacy. Who's heard of SIFT before? So SIFT, which we'll talk about quite a bit, stop, investigate the source, find trusted coverage, trace the original. That is really the core framework which I'm sharing with my students. And I would love if, you know, at our school and in English classes and other places, this became part of the common vocabulary for web literacy. What I have found is that this formula or this set of ingredients leads to some great dialogue about skill development and content too around media literacy skills. And so part of my vocabulary and my journey with this comes from this wonderful book by Whitney Phillips and Ryan Milner called You Are Here, A Field Guide for Navigating Polarized Speech, Conspiracy Theories, and Our Polluted Media Landscape. Okay. How many of us in the room remember the days of just, you know, three main networks of news? You know, I'm old enough to remember Wild Kingdom on Sunday night and just this very different media landscape where there were so, it was a simpler time, and I'm not saying it was a better time, but it was not as polluted a time and not as fractured a time with respect to media. I found this book, I think because of the Summer Institute on Digital Literacy, before they had published formally, and it was just openly available to be able to read, and I've really benefited from their analysis. I've gotten to hear Whitney as a keynote speaker at a virtual conference. These are terms that I will use in different contexts. I don't talk to my sixth graders a lot about the weaponization of social media, but I will talk about how it's polluted, how it's fractured. It's hard. It's complicated. There's a lot of voices, and that's a key idea. Who are we going to trust? How do you decide who it is that you're going to trust in a trusted voice? How many of you saw The Social Dilemma when that came out on Netflix? We had a wonderful parent university session that I helped facilitate GoToWebinar. Anyway, one of our best attended parent university sessions that we did, because we asked everyone to watch it in advance and then to have dialogue, and we had some parents involved. But I've heard other speakers at our conference talk about the work the Center for Humane Technology is doing. That's a fantastic organization and podcast. How many of you are familiar with Shoshana Zuboff's tome, The Age of Surveillance Capitalism? Being familiar with this term, surveillance capitalism, what does it mean to live in an attention economy? What does it mean to have our private data monetized in the ways that it has been monetized, and to have probably, in some cases, a lot of unintended consequences to this entire environment? Like, wow, how do we talk about that? What's the intersection of how we could be talking about that in school and what we can do about it? So I will contend, I've kind of said this already, that media literacy and web literacy skills have become as important as reading, writing, and arithmetic for everyone using the web. Everyone using the web. Ooh, that's also grandma and granddad. That's also the kids that have TikTok accounts and Roblox. Do you know how many kids are on Roblox? Do you know how big that whole platform is? It blows my mind. I also contend that the abilities to effectively filter and validate information before consuming and sharing are skills we must all cultivate and teach. I was a technology director for our school for 4 years, and one of the things I've observed is sometimes we just sort of assume people will figure this out. We don't activate the Gmail part of the Google account for our students until fifth grade. And part of what I do in my class is I help them learn how to unsubscribe and how to filter Gmail or Google notifications from Google Classroom. Oh my gosh, you know, in just a few short months, kids can have hundreds and hundreds of unread messages. You know, we shouldn't assume that everyone's going to figure these things out, whether they're young or they're old. I'm going to reference this article, which I have fully read and I've listened to a podcast about, but I want to dive deeper into this. This is a May 2022 article in The Atlantic by academic Jonathan Haidt called Why the Past 10 Years of American Life Have Been Uniquely Stupid. And this is not just about social media, and I do not agree with everything. I kind of live in a different part of Twitter than a lot of people realize this. Like, Twitter has been such a positive part of my life since I joined in 2007. I've networked and continue to network with educators literally around the planet. I just love being able to hang out with other people who are interested in similar things, doing similar kinds of work, being challenged by them. But there's a whole lot of other stuff going on with Twitter that's had big implications on elections and votes and lots of things. And so as Haidt is talking about former President Trump, he calls this the post-Babel era. And this, I just highlighted this part of the quote. He said, in the post-Babel era, outrage is the key to virality. Stage performance crushes competence. Twitter can overpower all the newspapers in the country. And stories cannot be shared or at least trusted across more than a few adjacent fragments. So truth cannot achieve widespread adherence. I am not a nihilist. Okay, I believe in human rights. I believe in the Constitution of the United States. It is so interesting today, and I'm going to try to pick all of my words carefully. I'm recording the audio of this to share. It can really be hazardous to enter into some conversations today that touch on some of these issues. But I feel a commitment as an educator to talk about these things and to find ways to, in developmentally appropriate ways, help my kids and help all of us become better thinkers and to intersect with this. So how can we safely talk about these issues at school? If we had more time, that would be a great breakout question to do right now with your partner at your table, because that answer is going to look different at our different schools. As I've iterated this lesson, I now explicitly draw this out for my kids to say, at one level, conspiracy theories absolutely can be entertaining. Like, I love National Treasure. I mean, that movie caused more interest for our children, especially our daughters, when we went to Washington, D.C. Can we go see the Declaration of Independence, Dad? Can we go visit North Church in Boston? Like, it was cool. But at some point, these can actually threaten public health. And we've continued to live into that through the pandemic. And some folks will contend that perhaps there's an existential threat to liberal democracy if you have large swaths of the population living in a different reality, and conspiracy theories can play into that, especially when institutions are not trusted. And these issues are really big, and they touch on civics education. They touch on the core of what our roles are as educators, be we private independent school educators or public educators. And we've got lots and lots of very emotionally laden and vitriolic at times conversation, shouting, interactions happening around a lot of issues. How can we safely talk about these issues in school? I have found this specific unit and these specific lessons to be an answer to that question. And as you find answers to that question, please share with me and share with others, because we need to collaborate. So, the moon landings. This is an article from The Guardian in July of 2019. A recent YouGov poll found that 1 in 6 British people agreed with the statement, quote, "The moon landings were staged," end quote. 4% believed the hoax theory was definitely true, 12% that it was probably true, with a further 9% registering as don't knows. Moon hoaxing was more prevalent among the young. 21% of the 24 to 35-year-olds agreed that the moon landings were staged, compared with 13% of over 55s. Well, what does hype talk about happening around 2015 and the middle of the last decade? The ascendancy of YouTube, the ascendancy of virality with conspiracy theories, and the speed and ease with which these extreme outlier positions really garner a lot of attention, a lot of clicks, the algorithms that the social media companies utilize boosting these things. And so now you have videos with millions of views that are purporting things like, we never landed on the moon. So, if I had been able to take this video again, I would have had an extra light to highlight my face better. I went with my wife and I, to the Johnson Space Center in February. Have you ever heard of the Space Exploration Educators Conference, SEEK? It is amazing. I don't know how I didn't find out about this. We are big time space geeks, and what an exciting day to share space with kids. And I'll try not to get completely off track here, but like, it was cool to be standing in front of an Apollo capsule and talk a little bit about this and, create some media and just, continue my own journey of how is it that I can share this with students and with teachers. Does anybody know, that's Lyndon Johnson and John F. Kennedy. Any idea who's in the middle there? One of the Nazi scientists, part of Operation, starts with a P, do you know it? Brought Wernher von Braun and hundreds of scientists. There's the book. Yeah, Annie Jacobson wrote the book, Operation Paperclip. Listen to that on Audible. It's fascinating. Classified for years, right? The United States government wasn't really excited. Wernher von Braun was in the SS. Okay, these were Nazis. And of course, we competed with the Russians. This is a bit of a backstory and not exactly, it's part of the story of the Apollo moon landings, but it is part of the story of conspiracy theory, because I do not want my kids to hear me say all conspiracies are bunk. There's no validity to any of this, because, what is a conspiracy? Well, it's when people are doing something in secret and not everybody knows about it, and more than one person gets together to try to do something, and they're doing it with secrecy. That's sort of the operational definition that we have for it. So to give you a bit of an overview for the unit, I think I want to just show you a culminating, I'll tell you about the four parts and show you a culminating video. So this unit, we basically have three main videos we watch, which we sketch note, which I love, and I'll talk a little bit about that. And then we narrate some of our highlights and our takeaways from those. There's a great animator called The Odd Ones Out, James Ralston. Have you heard of him before? One of my sixth graders, now an eighth grader. It's Gray Zedlitz, because somebody in the audience will know. He told me about this YouTube animator, and lots of my kids have watched him, but he has a really great video called Conspiracy Theories and Crazy People. And so we watch that, and we talk about that and different conspiracy theories. But then we watch a video by a moon hoax advocate, 15 reasons why the moon hoax was, well, the moon landing was a hoax. And then we watch someone who is a filmmaker, made a video called Moon Hoax Not. He's actually lives in Amsterdam. And it's longer, it's a little bit harder to get through, but he really takes on, you know, many of these points that are being made about the flag waving in the wind and about no dust and no stars in the pictures and these different kinds of issues. And then my kids make a culminating video. So I want to show you one of my sixth graders' videos. This is Sophia's video. We use Seesaw as a sharing platform. Not only, of course, the kids can share with me, they could just share with me with Google Classroom, but I want them to share with each other. I want their parents to get to see their work. I want them to have conversations, because this is like a holy grail. Oh my gosh, you went home and talked to your parent or your grandparent or somebody else about stuff we were learning in class. So this is a 2-minute and 4-second video, utilizes a script. She has watched these three videos. She has filled out for like a Mad Lib the scripts, and that wasn't something I was doing initially. And then she's filled in her own information.
Hi, this is Sophia. Today is February 2022. Today I'd like to share with you some of the things I learned in our 6th grade media literacy class unit on Fruit Loop conspiracy theories and using SIFT to evaluate information in our digital world. We learned about SIFT to find more about information online. The S in SIFT means soft. I means investigate source, F means find better coverage, and T means trace claims, quotes, and media back to the original context. Always make sure to do lateral reading. We watched two videos about how the moon landing was faked or if it wasn't. We also looked at Wikipedia articles and found out about other sources and the sites to find the original source. We learned that not everything online is true. Jay Vecears talked about how the moon landing was faked. He talked about how there are no stars in any of the photos and that the flag was waving, even though there's no wind on the moon. I believe that he's doing it just for entertainment, not for any educational purposes. I noticed that sometimes he didn't make sense when he talked. He is a comedian, so we are not sure if he is serious or if he's just being a comedian. S.G. Collins talked about how the moon landing was not faked in his video Moon Hoax Not. He said that there were no stars in any of the pictures because of exposure, and the flag was not actually waving in the wind. It was the vacuum of space that made it look like it was waving. The technology back then was not good enough to fake the moon landing, but it was good enough to get to the moon. We did some research on him, and he claims that he is a professional filmmaker, so he knows a lot about how it was filmed. He also seemed to be a comedian, and is also doing it only for the views. In conclusion, I believe S.G. Collins and J.P. Spear are both correct, in that you can believe in anything you want, as long as it won't hurt anybody. You should also use SIFT to find out if a source is trustworthy or not, when it seems
Alright, so, it's so interesting to see the things that kids genuinely create on their own and what their conclusions are. My wife went to Harvard before pandemic for Project Zero, and their whole work on making thinking visible, so good with thinking routines and all of that. And so, like I tell my kids, I do not agree with everything in these videos that we're watching, okay? And we'll talk about that. And I will tell my kids, I am not here to politically indoctrinate you. I am not here to have you join the Republican Party or the Democratic Party or socialist or anything. Okay, I am here to try and help you think more critically. But I am going to say I support human rights. I am going to say I support liberal democracy. I am going to say I want us to pursue truth. And so, you know, anyway, I don't use the word nihilism with that. I really don't want us to be living in a world where everyone's a nihilist. All right, project goals. We want a deepened understanding of what conspiracy theories are, identify them, which I would call beliefs of crazy people or just ideas people share for purposes like gaining more social media views and likes, developing web literacy skills, using SIFT, obtaining background details about sources of information online. How many of you use the phrase lateral reading now with kids? I did not bring my football, but I have borrowed from Justin Miles. I've given it back. He's my neighbor. He has a football. I like the object lessons at church, like the children's sermon, where it gets concrete. So we have the football out, and we've done multiple demonstrations. What's a lateral? And we've got videos of amazing NFL, you know, final seconds of the game when they lateraled it 20 times and scored a touchdown. Lateral reading is not vertical reading on that website. It is going to another source. What does another source say about the source? It's a key idea for web literacy and finding trusted sources. And Wikipedia. I love this lesson, Launchpad Wikipedia. In terms of preparation, how many of you use a sharing space where people outside the students in the class could see the work? Okay? Back in the day, before social media, we were blogging more and there were, you know, these platforms and helping students do that. It's not nearly as common. Last year, we used a platform called writeabout.com. My kids blogged. I went back to Seesaw because parent visibility. It is so hard to get parents to see student work outside of a conference that we're having together. So I think that's important to have an interactive writing space where the students can see each other's work and provide feedback, and we can also reach parents as well as other family members. You can have up to 10 people in the family, you know, following a student seesaw. Sketchnoting is a big part of what we do in advance. We have Chromebooks that have styluses that actually I think work great. It's the best Chrome stylus. We have Dell Chromebooks that are new this year. And I ask students to repeatedly post several times to their learning journal to provide feedback. And I also have a big poster for SIF. But these are foundational skills and ideas. How many of you have made a sketchnote before? Okay, I almost thought about, you know, having you do one of these. Sketchnoting is fantastic. Literally, you're trying to take ideas and images and sounds that come in your eyes and your ears, that go in your brain, and you try to have them come out your hand as words and pictures. Okay, we play Pictionary one day to get this idea that this isn't about art. This isn't about creating beautiful art. If it's beautiful, that's great. But it's about communicating and you retelling. Can you retell me or someone else the key ideas of this video or this lesson? I've already spoken about lateral reading a little bit, and then this Wikipedia as launch pad. These are all examples of, well, I guess the upper left one is mine, but these other ones are student sketch notes for our Wikipedia lesson. We use Padlet also as a platform for students, and you can click that link and view just, there's four different sketchnoting lessons we've done, but now it's really an introductory lesson, and then we move on to the Wikipedia lesson. All of our kids, all of us as teachers, have been told at some point Wikipedia is evil. It is terrible. Never use it. Anybody can write it. How old is Wikipedia? It's over 20 years old now. Isn't it interesting that you and I get to see the same Wikipedia page when we visit at the same time? Because it does change. It's not like Facebook where it's going to be curated based upon what you've liked or you haven't liked or who your friends are. The talk pages of Wikipedia are fascinating. It's one of the things, if it's a news source, it probably has a Wikipedia page. Is it controversial? Does it have, what kind of bias does it have? Does it have identifiable bias? Is it controversial? We can look on the talk page because that's where the Wikipedians, you know, will argue things out. And so we use this wonderful video by John Green, which I muted the audio for, but it's part of the Crash Course from PBS series on navigating digital information. Woohoo! It is just fantastic. And I use that and we sketchnote it. And I literally say this to my kids. Do some teachers disagree about certain topics we teach about in school? Yeah. Is that okay? Yeah, it is. And so there are teachers I know who absolutely don't share my perspective on Wikipedia. That is okay. We are not using Wikipedia as our ultimate source. The lesson is called Launchpad Wikipedia, because what do we find at the bottom of every Wikipedia article? References and sources from quote-unquote mainstream media, journals and sources. And so that's an important prerequisite, I think, to this lesson and unit. So let me share with you in our final 10 minutes 10 things that I have learned, and I'm still learning, teaching this unit 6 times over the past 2 years. Number one, I think sketchnoting is not only fun, it's challenging. I am not a great artist and drawer. I have practiced to try to improve my own sketchnoting, but it just amazes me how we can be passively consuming, our kids can be passively consuming a video, maybe enjoying it, and maybe some things are sticking, right? You just don't know. It's that whole visible thinking deal, like what's sticking in the brain. But getting students to, giving them permission to use sketchnoting as a tool, and this is one of my favorite TEDx talks, this is Rachel Smith's Drawing in Class, and we sketchnoted. It's one of these things like, oh my gosh, you have this stylus and this Chromebook. How are you using that for your learning? And right now, and hopefully this will continue to grow, it hasn't been a whole lot. And so I want to give my kids permission to say, look, whatever class you're taking, take the notes that help you. Learn what is going to be effective for you to help things be sticky. Because that's part of what we're wanting as teachers, is for this stuff to stick, to make sense to you, and for you to be able to talk about it, tell about it later. Second of all, the Launchpad Wikipedia lesson. I just love this. In fact, some of these would be wonderful. I would love to do them like as a separate workshop. Preparing for this session, I realized, man, I'd like to do a full day workshop where we just do it. Let's do all 4 of these parts of the lesson. As a teacher, a lot of times I will learn more. This is an awareness level session. Hey, you can do this stuff. But like getting to actually do it, make the sketch note, share them on Padlet, narrate it in Seesaw. Like those are all great things that, anyway, I'm thinking about, how could I share this and continue to learn about this with more teachers? I think Seesaw is a phenomenal platform, not just for our young kids, because all of our lower and primary division teachers use Seesaw, but our art teacher in our upper division uses that as a portfolio and a learning journal. I continue to use it because see who saw Sophia's, video? Her parents. Her mom left a comment. That may not seem like a big deal. I get real excited about that because having taught for a fair number of years, it's rare that that kind of thing can happen. It doesn't transform everything, but I do receive feedback from time to time about parents. Thank you for the communication. Thank you for the conversations that we're having. And it is a great platform. And I think that portfolios and digital portfolios are important, and that's something we need to continue to work on in school. This is a big one, which I'm violating right now, talking fast in my last 8 minutes. Slower is better. The first couple trimesters I taught this, we were taking 50-minute lesson to watch this video, sketch note it, and narrate it. And let me tell you, the quality of what my students were producing, it has improved as we've taken 2 days for each video. We're taking our time. We're not watching the whole thing the first day, or in some cases, we're breaking it up, or we're going to watch it again. We're going to attend to the details. I don't think I'll have time this trimester, but last trimester, and I do teach my kids how to make info pics. Okay, memes sometimes are info pics. It's just a picture that has short text on it. We created info pics about SIFT. And my kids got creative with this. You already saw J.P. Sears and S.G. Collins. These kinds of things can help make learning sticky. And as I have slowed down and felt less pressure to cover as much, and I'm fortunate and very thankful that I've had this opportunity to kind of reinvent this curriculum. What should we teach in 5th grade computer class? What should we teach in 6th grade computer class? I just think the quality of the thinking as reflected by the student work has really improved. I already said this, but it's a pretty big deal. There's a line somewhere, this is the trailer to National Treasure, between fun and dangerous. The odd one's out. The YouTuber I said, we start with his video, Conspiracy Theories and Crazy People. I mean, number one, he doesn't use profanity and it's family friendly. I've learned when you ask middle schoolers to share with you the YouTube channels they watch, number one, don't ever show one of those without checking it out fully before you share it. And also, I just say, guys, it's gotta be family friendly. Is this G or PG? Yeah, it just, it needs to be. And there's a lot of things that some of them watch that's not. But there is this line, and I love this movie, but I also know that there are rabbit holes that we can go down, and at some point, if we become such a believer in conspiracy theories that we literally trust no one, and we trust no institutions, and we believe there is no truth, we have gone to a dark place, individually, and it could be, you know, societally. I'm misusing this phrase, but my sixth learning point is that the age of onset for web literacy is earlier than ever. This isn't exactly right, but what I'm trying to say is, when do we need to start these conversations? Guess what? A lot of our middle school kids are intersecting with the darkness that is in the world. There are sometimes fewer barriers there between them and the darkness than have ever existed before. And last year particularly, I had some sixth grade boys that were really into memes. And they were sharing memes that are not funny. They should not be funny. We shouldn't laugh about this. And there are some very adult things and stuff that maybe some of it was going over their heads. I have not taught a unit on memes, and that might be something more appropriate for a high school course than a middle school course. But I've just realized we can't wait till 11th or 12th grade for these conversations. Middle school is a great place to be talking about this. I've also learned more about the power of transmediation and what I would call create-to-learn pedagogy. I actually started the Wikipedia page on the English Wikipedia for transmediation back in 2005. That means you're translating a work into a different medium. So we watched this video, but now I want you to make it into a sketch note. You've heard about these ideas in these videos, and we've done like a Venn diagram or a compare and contrast. Now I want you to use Adobe Creative Cloud Express, which used to be Adobe Spark. Take some pictures, take your script, make me a video. Okay, you're transmediating. Wow, that can be powerful in terms of having students own the learning and also share it. They can become the teachers. And we all know it's harder to teach something than it is to be a student, you know, learning about it. And then create to learn. My website, showwithmedia.com, I started in 2013. 12 different media products, or is there 14 now? I think there's 14. That you can create, and having kids create these things and share them is really, really powerful. Lateral reading. I think I will play just a little bit of this. So there's audio to this. This is from the Stanford History and Education Group. Okay, that is a fantastic website, and it leads right into lateral reading, creating a new tab, putting the name of the news source with the word Wikipedia. Boom, is there a page? Let's read about it. Let's check it out. Let's go to the sources at the bottom. Let's investigate the source, which is the eye of SIFT. Number 9, script templates. How many of you know the beauty in Google Classroom of what I've boxed there? Make a copy for each student. Do you know the power? My favorite part of Google Classroom, right? Because that allows, I mean, just like I'd hand you a worksheet, I can hand you a document, which I've used slideshows sometimes too, and then every student has a copy, they can work on it, it's already got their name on it, I can already see their work as they're working on it, and so we've used templates for these different elements of the lesson. And then the last thing is, referring back to this acrostic, conspire. Now this actually comes from an article that John Cook and some others wrote relating to climate change, and it's called Coronavirus Plandemic. I don't know if you had a chance to intersect with the Plandemic documentary, quote unquote, about a year ago. But they identify 7 traits of conspiratorial thinking. Do we notice any of these things? Contradictory, overriding suspicion, nefarious intent, something must be wrong, persecuted victim, immune to evidence, reinterpreting randomness. The video we watched references The Shining and the door sign, and if you reverse this and flip it around, you know, it spells moon and all these things. And you know, those aren't in every conspiracy theory, but what we're trying to do with this unit is help students think critically and try and identify things that are way out there. So, I already said this, I'm not here to politically indoctrinate my kids, but I am certainly teaching this lesson to try to help them think more critically and be better prepared for the world that we're living in. There's a wonderful poster that was Creative Commons licensed by a librarian in Oregon, and I've got that link, and I have this printed really large, you know, right at the front of my classroom. If we had more time, which we don't, I was wanting to do a turn, pair, and share. But I want to just give this to you as homework. I'd love your feedback. I haven't had a chance. This is my first public presentation in person in 2 years. I'm so excited we're back together. But, you know, we can connect online. There's a whole group of teachers passionate about this. And so please reach out to me. Also, consider the Summer Institute in Digital Literacy. It's the second week of July. I will be a workshop presenter. I can't be a leader of the cohort because we're going to move to North Carolina this summer. But I am going to be sharing some workshops. And it's a great tribe. It's a great hashtag. The first Monday of every month, they get together over Zoom and talk about a book or an article, media literacy educators from around the world. That's part of the Brazilian contingent in 2019 that I connected with that are just, Brazil's doing national stuff on this, right? And if you followed Bolsonaro and what's happened there, like, there's a lot of things that are happening with the weaponization of social media and impacts to democracy and elections that are global in nature. It's not just the United States. So I am working on a book called Conspiracies and Culture Wars, but on my media literacy website, I have a bunch of different resources, and as I get that completed, I'll be sharing that. So thank you all so much. I look forward to connecting with you in the future. Good luck as you go forward with media literacy and your own students. And I'll be...
Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcasts are independently produced by Wesley Fryer and are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Only license. Learn more at www.speedofcreativity.org.